Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snack Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Welcome to another episode of the Streaking the Lawn podcast. Once again, my name is Pierce. And once again, Caroline's with me today. Hello, Darns. How are you?
Hi.
Hi. plenty to talk about now that we've had a little bit to digest the disappointing exit from the tournament for the Hoos. And now we're in the thick of this crazy off-season of college basketball transfer portal. One that I'm sure if you're listening to this, you already know Virginia's going to be very active in, having lost at this point three outgoing transfers in addition to the guys that we assume are graduating or moving on to professional basketball.
It's gonna look like the end to end game.
Yeah, if you're not super on top of why this is all happening, the big reason in addition to the fact that this seems to be more popular year after year anyhow, with the pandemic year, that no one's going to have to sit out for, you know, a year like normally. So that's sort of the extra juice to spark why this exodus from programs all over the country are dealing this with this. UVA clearly not the only one. I saw estimates saying, you know, they anticipate 1,500 students.
Athletes. Yeah, according to the latest from Brian Bennett and my friend Sam Vicenni from The Athletic, in the most updated March 30th, ranking the 50 best available college basketball transfers and high school recruits story that they have over there at The Athletic, over 1,000 players are already in the transfer portal.
Right. So they're thinking they might get as high as 1,500 or so. There's only, 350, so a little more than that, D1 teams. So it gives you an idea, just like the average per D1 program, really, what's going to be for roster turnover. So the Hoos are not alone, but obviously it's not news that anyone really likes. I think, you know, you expect some turnover and some transition, some guys knowing that it's not a great fit, but we'll dive into the stories from a lot of what's going on. But first, let's talk more depressing things, because we haven't talked about the loss to Ohio. So last we left you, you know, the Hoos had to exit the ACC tournament due to a COVID test result and contact tracing thereafter. And so they had just beaten Syracuse barely. Syracuse, not a bad team. I didn't mean anything by that.
I was like, hold on. That was actually probably one of, you know, their three wins are. Well,
it was a good win for this year's team, because they had no good wins. You know, if only we got to just play Georgia Tech every time out, then that could have been their whole resume. Anyway, they made it past Syracuse. They were supposed to play Georgia Tech, and COVID did not let them. And then they fell for the upset that all of America saw coming. Lost to the Ohio Bobcats. So let's talk a little bit about that loss. And you know, I think that we're used to dealing with upsets, right?
You know, there's a few. I look at this game.
We all saw it coming, you know, and that's the most disappointing thing is.
It's weird, like, because that's the thing for me is, like, if everyone. I think there were legitimate reasons to expect that this was possible. The first of which is they didn't get to practice for the entire week, traveled the day before the game, had to wake up 1 a.m. the day of the game, get another COVID test, do their walkthrough and shoot. Like, and I'm not, and people be like, stop making excuses. Like, it's not an excuse. I'm just stating facts. Like, this is what happened. And I still maintain that if I didn't like that matchup from the second it was announced, just from the way that Ohio plays, the connections, the whatever, they're a good team. And that's their crap MAC team. Like, they're not a garbage team. Like, just because they didn't play well against Creighton the next game out doesn't mean that, like, Virginia's extra bad. It's just the way that Virginia, there are a few things that I was very frustrated with, one of which was not getting the ball inside more against one of the worst 2-point shooting defensive teams. You know what I mean? Like, they give up a lot of twos. Now, Ohio had a great game plan to give Virginia open looks outside, and Virginia did not make them. Like, they shot 25% from three, which is significantly below their average on the season. And if they shot remotely close to their average, they win this by 10, 15 points, and it's a non-starter. Now, you could say if they practice, maybe their shooting would be better. But overall, I don't think Virginia played a terrible game outside of the fact that they sucked at shooting. Like, you know, and I mean, yes, that's a big part of it. Yeah. But the shot selection was there. The offensive movement was there. They didn't turn the ball over a lot. They didn't give up a bunch of offensive rebounds. You know, like, the stuff that you would say generally are make a good game or a win, they did those things except converting shooting, which you can point directly at not practicing for a week.
Yeah, I mean, that's why they lost, right? They couldn't make any shots. But, you know, the 8-for-31 from 3-point. I don't think Ohio's any good. I don't see anything in what, you know, they played Illinois close. That's their best result. And then they won the MAC tournament, which, yeah, I mean, you know.
Yeah, I think Virginia beats that team 99 times out of 100.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, so, this just happened to be the time when you got them. And not only that, the foul trouble that Jay got into, the guy that they needed was Justin McCoy, who unfortunately was the one that was behind at home, which I feel devastated for him. Like, and I know that he didn't, like, none of this is, like, nothing is his fault. I'm not blaming him. It's just the guy that you needed in that specific situation. Like, I think he would have been fantastic against this team because he was the guy that goes at the boards, that gets offensive rebounds, that can put it back or can drive and get a bucket at the rim.
Yeah.
And they didn't have that, and they needed it.
It was a big loss, obviously, not having McCoy. And you, like you said, I mean, the results sort of dictate the importance of McCoy's part in the roster and shooting being impacted by not practicing. I mean, UVA should beat that team comfortably every time. And they didn't because they didn't convert their shots. It was nice to see them not turn the ball over and over and look, you know, rattled. This wasn't like the UMBC, you know, just got in their heads and UMBC made every shot and you're just sort of going, oh my God, what's going on? And never really recover in the second half of that UMBC game. This was very different. They had open shots and didn't make any of them. Ohio didn't really either until sort of late run in the end of the second, you know, towards the end of the second half that put it out of reach. The most disappointing thing, obviously, to me is the lack of any adjustments. I mean, you know, they're going to go, okay, well, we're a good shooting team. So let's do that. And that's our game plan. And, it never worked. So I know a lot of times you try and shoot out of the shooting slumps. Yeah. We saw that from Hauser a lot this year is starting a game a little rusty and then sort of finding it in the second half. But unfortunately for the Hoos, Hauser,
that was his worst, like one of his worst, if not the
Huff
worst.
Went 1-for-6. Trey Murphy's the only guy who seemed like, you know, he was going to score. I mean, Hauser had finished with 15 points cause he made his free throws, but, Trey's the only one who shot pretty decently.
And he only took one 2-point attempt though. That's like that's where I get frustrated. And it's not, look, it's one of those, like when the guys shoot the way that they have over the course of the season and get those looks, I don't necessarily hate that they take them, but it's also the idea of at a certain point when that's not working, and it just combined with one of the there's never, I was saying ill-timed scoring drought sounds stupid because there's never a good time for a scoring drought. But they had 10-minute scoring drought when then Ohio, so I will say, like, I don't know if this is where, you know, I'm not in any way saying like their coach adjusted, look, but Virginia was doing an outstanding job on Jason Preston as the ball handler.
Yeah.
Reese Beekman was fantastic. They had really great minutes from Casey on him, and he finished with 11 points, and he did have a double double. He had 13 rebounds, something like that. The kid's really good. But they were able to contain him when he was the primary ball handler. When their coach mm-hmm. moved him off ball, that's when Ohio started getting their success, like hitting, mm-hmm. you know, he was able to skate more. And it's harder to guard somebody. I mean, look at Joe Harris. Like, that's why he's always cutting like that. Or Kyle Guy. It's hard to guard somebody when they're able to move off ball like that. And so I thought that was, you know, and they hit some threes from like middle
Preston
of nowhere.
Isn't what beat them. I mean, you know, they held Ohio in check.
Again, it was Vanderplas the shooting.
Made enough shots. But what I was going to say is that UVA didn't do anything to play to any advantage that they had. They went
right,
out and said,
which
we're
is not taking
shoot
it inside
three throws, or three pointers and missed all those three pointers and never tried anything different until it was panic time, you know, urgency time until it was, okay, we have to score right away or we're going to lose. And Beekman takes the ball as in the first half we were tweeting, wow, Beekman can beat this guy off the dribble. Anybody they put on him, they can't keep Beekman out of the lane in the first half. And no, nothing until urgency time. And he does the three straight possessions that they score on. I mean, you know, it's a little too late. And then the backbreakers, Kihei tries it in the fourth possession after those three Beekman ones, and it didn't work. You know, they could have played to their superior roster a little more aggressively. You know, I don't think Tony's sitting there going, "Don't try," you know, or anything like that. Obviously, so you don't know what kind of limitations they feel. Yeah, I think it's a team we say every year that seems to be a little passive in trying not to make mistakes. I mean, that's obviously preached by the coaches. Take care of the ball, be purposeful on offense, find a great shot, things like that. So, you know, you sort of see that, oh, wait a second mode, and that sort of, I don't know, amounted to them just saying, we're going to try and do what we do best, and what they were doing best didn't work. I just would like to see them try something else, you know.
I think after the game, they were all like, "We settled into taking threes." Like, exactly. No one's surprised. Like, they'll learn from it. And in my, it's, I don't know. It sucks to lose, but at the same time, this season, I just have had a really hard time, like, really getting angry about anything. maybe it's, you know, the stops and starts and the whole, you know, global pandemic that's killed over, you know, 500,000 people, but just like, if they have a week of practice, do I think they win? Yeah. Can we change any of that? No. Does this change
not much
how
you
I
and I can
about...
change at all?
Yeah.
You know?
Does this change how I think about Tony Bennett? No. Like, is this still a good program? Yes. Like, does the last, you know, I just, even with all of the ups and downs, and, you know, we talked on end about the defense not being as good as it was years previous and all this stuff, like all of my hand wringing and all of the, you know, and again, we've said this before, it's not to say that don't criticize things. Like, there are things that can be fixed, and those need to be addressed. And I think that the experiment of having all of your good shooters be in the front court is not ideal, I guess. You know, like, three guys that shoot 40% was awesome, but also at the same time, like, when you're pulling Jay out and he's shooting 40%, like, in shooting threes and they don't go in, you don't have anyone in there to tip it out. You don't have anyone to, you know, if he's trying to take that shot, he's not, you know, working with his back to the basket and doing the turnaround and hooks that he can do. So I think it'll be interesting to see how they change the offense and tweak it. And the people that say that they don't tweak the offense, I don't think they're paying attention. But anyway, there are slight changes that they're making and doing stuff. So
I think it ties in a lot to obviously what we're here to talk about with the roster turnover and the transfers. Yeah. It's sort of the same story arc to be frustrated by as fans, or to be, condemning as a, you know, sports talking head who's upset with how Virginia runs a slow pace or things like that, is what did they need was some sort of aggressive attacking scoring, and they only got it a little bit again from Beekman and not enough the rest of the game. Kihei gets aggressive and doesn't work the second half of this season because teams know he can't score over the big guy in the lane, so they know to stay in the shooters. You know what I mean? Somebody who has the ability to finish a little bit better, you have to come in, and so that opens up those shooters. So that's really what was working for Kihei early on, when, and you know, he had the space to score, or he found the passers or the shooters with his passing. For whatever culmination of adjustments people put on him, it didn't really work the second half of the season, you know. And so these guys who you would think have the physical or skill set to be successful in attacking are now all transferring. So that's my whole point, rambling point, is we see what the team needed, and now that type of player are the ones who are entering the transfer portal. It's sort of what Casey brought to the team, but you know, never clicked.
Definitely could end up being the person that was their driver. I hate transfers only because I'm sad when people leave, because the, like, having talked to some of these players, and I didn't talk to Jabri much because this season being what it is and weirdness, we didn't get one of those opportunities in the open gym where you get to walk up and talk to anybody. But Casey is a nice kid, you know, like, I just, it's a bummer that it didn't work out, and it's a bummer, like, Justin McCoy is a nice kid. But you know, like, the stuff that Casey, like, where you wanted to click, like, sometimes you just fell into that. You know how I feel about long twos. Like, that's where they needed Casey to continue to the rim and, you know, take it harder and make those types of plays, as opposed to step back twos or what. Right. And you're right. This is, I'm just going to tell people now, don't try and make any assessments of what you think this team is. We've already started getting the tweets to the STL account, like, this team's going to shit. Like, no one knows this. Like, they're going to get transfers in. Mm-hmm. And I am in the camp, I don't think Trevor Keels is going to commit to Virginia. But no,
he's not. So let's move on.
Everyone, from that. Yeah. You know, will then call that a huge miss again. Like, it's one of those, like, would you rather be, you know, it's better to have loved and lost than never loved at all. It's kind of like, is it better to be in the top four and not get the recruit than never be in the top four?
No, we've seen
all?
It. No, I mean, look at Johnny Juzang. Look at
Quinterly.
Like, these are all
blue
chip guys.
But why didn't Quinterly come to Virginia? Because there's literal, like, FBI allegations that Arizona paid to have him come there. So I don't consider that a recruiting miss.
But he didn't go to Arizona.
Right, because of the allegations paid. He then went to Villanova and then transferred to Alabama. So I don't consider Quinterly a recruiting miss.
He's not the only one that they've missed out on, you know.
No, and I'm not saying that, but when people sit there and watch, like, Johnny Juice, like, there's only so much you can do sometimes, I think, when the big boys come in.
Yeah.
And Cal swoops in and says, come to Kentucky. Like, at a certain point, like, I don't necessarily think that that's a recruit. I don't know as much about it. I don't know what these conversations are having. But I'm glad that Johnny Juzang has found a spot where he's thriving, because I was worried that after what happened, like, being pushed to the bench at Kentucky, like, that was going to be it for him and transferred out and all that stuff. But I'm just saying, like,
It's chapter three in the same story to me. It's that
they're not
type
the same.
Of
they're not the same.
Five-star guards. These guys that we see as aggressive attacking scoring guards are who these misses have been with, largely, because it's what the wrestlers needed, right? Like, that's, we've had this dearth of, like, ball handling aggressive scorers on the roster since Ty Jerome left, really. And so that, to me, it all ties in. That type of player is leaving. They're not getting the targets that they want of that type of player. And it seems like the biggest weakness on the court over and over again. Why? I don't know. You know, I mean, I'm not the coaching staff. I'm not the recruits. I'm not the people steering the recruits one way or another. It obviously is part of this national chatter about UVA and whatnot.
I don't know about that. Look, so what year is Quinterly now? He's a third year, right? Second, third. So do you think that he also was going to come here and sit behind Ty and Kyle when they still had eligibility until last year? Like that's, it's not just, it's not cut and dry. Like, did you get this person? Like there's so many, there's nuance to these things.
Yeah. But if you like, want to list 10 of them, there's still ones you didn't get, you know,
Juzang would still reason. Also be a soft, like that's, I just think that saying like, just because XYZ is doing well as a junior at another school, which is his third school, does not mean that it was a huge blow up ruined like by Virginia. Like, that's what I don't get. Like,
I didn't say it was a huge blow up ruined by Virginia. I'm just saying that's that type of person is no, I understand why Quinterly didn't come here. I understand why Juzang didn't come here. It's near impossible to recruit against the blue bloods, you know, to borrow a Tyson Tate term. But this type of player continues to not come here. And like I was saying, that's part of this chatter about UVA. I think it fits into the national criticism, or what you would call it, from sports writers or whoever else. I mean, that's who gets paid to put their opinions out there about UVA. Or whatnot.
Well, I just think that 2 years, like, we're talking about like a 2 year span, right?
No, it's way more than you want
to
go.
I mean, they've had good guards from from Brogdon to Guy to right. Jerome to Hunter. So like we're 2 years, not even 2 years removed from the national championship, mm-hmm. where we had those people where they were supposed to still be here in last year. And then again, I don't know if anyone heard, but there was this whole thing called a global pandemic where affected recruiting and the way that they were able to talk to and evaluate players.
Right. But it's more than 2 years of evidence since that championship, you know, big three. I mean, we've been over this 1,000 times, but 2017, Marco Anthony's the guard. Okay. So he leaves. Right. And you know, he was a late sort of like, well, let's take a chance on this guy and see if it works out. It didn't. After that, the 2018, you've got, well, I'm going to get to the point about incoming transfers. We even talked about that. Well, as we go through these years, the one nice thing to keep in mind is the incoming transfers you see lists seem to always work out. So that gives me a big glimmer, more than a glimmer of hope, because Braxton Key comes in 2018, right? Obviously worked out. But you've got Kihei, who is our one remaining guard and, you know, veteran there.
Also
and
so, worked out, so cool.
Right. And you've got Statman, who hasn't worked out. That's
who's been ill,
guard.
Cool.
Okay, has he worked out? No. Has he shown
anything? I mean, you can't predict that someone is
okay,
going to have
let's move
an
on
illness
to
keeps
Casey
them
Morsell,
from playing in the
who's
game.
Who's also gone. I'm just saying, you haven't had any success bringing in those, you know, scoring guards.
Again, we're talking
Walden
about
Tensei,
like,
sure, you know, another again transfer, that's helpful, but now we're into the fourth class, which is 2020, so it's not 2 years, it's
it
four.
Is because again they have to sit behind those people, so you
yeah,
can't
every,
we're talking
every
about Virginia
has
is a no not every program ones. Not every program has upperclassmen, don't say that, that's not exactly the same. Virginia is a four-year school most of the time. This year changes obviously with transfers and different stuff, but there is a progression of players through the program that continue to play and usually play yeah. more their later years of the school.
Most programs are like that.
Not when you're considering against Duke, Carolina, Kentucky. Villanova does. I will give Villanova. They had turnover after their second title. That was unusual for them. But most, if we're talking about these like big misses against people that swoop in and take them, it's not always their four-year schools that they're competing with when you're talking about five-star guards to come in and play, which is also part of the thing that people talk about, is because learning the defense and all of that isn't something that might not necessarily appeal to. And that's for people to decide on their own if that's what they think is better or not for Virginia. If you want to have one and done's come, I don't know that right. they'll be as successful because of the system. All I'm saying is that looking at one, we also don't know why people are leaving.
Sure.
And you know, you look at players that have just spent a year of their life, probably the hardest year they've ever had playing basketball. Maybe some want to be closer to home. Maybe yeah. some want more playing time. Maybe some hate Coach Bennett now. I'm not saying that's the case. I don't have any right, inside right. information. I'm saying like when people say, oh, why are people leaving? We don't know. And it honestly doesn't matter to me. Like I'm not going to assign why someone's leaving because it's up to them. They have one chance to play college basketball and it's up to them.
Criticizing any of them for leaving.
I'm saying
make their own decisions. And
that
you know,
like Marco wishes. Anthony left because mm-hmm. he didn't think that there was going to be the playing time. Is what I've heard. Like that's he wanted, okay. and he's done great at Utah State. He got to start. They went to the tournament this year. All that stuff. Right. I'm just saying, like, I don't think that you can point to I don't agree. I can see, like, I think that there's plenty of previous recruiting success under Bennett's putting in good, successful guards that, looking at just the time frame leading up to and directly following the national championship, which the first one ever with three guys that left early, changed the way that you'd have to fill spots.
Yeah, so, but
those, I am not in panic mode about recruiting yet.
If, well, my whole point was those years since that national championship class, you have Kihei, who has his ups and downs, but is obviously the most successful of the guards who've come in. You could sigh at ups and downs all you want, but it's
just
clear.
he's clearly the, like, and I'm not saying you, just like, I'm tired of Kihei being the punching bag for every inadequacy for the entire team. Like, it's just, it's exhausting, I think. And I feel bad for, like, people, when people are like, he should transfer, I wish it was so-and-so, like, that's such crummy stuff to say. And like, the guy has done, like, last year, like, that team last year had no business being second in the ACC, and the reason that they were was largely in part to what Kihei Clark did. Like, I just don't have the patience for, like, the constant, no one gets the same scrutiny that he does, and I don't, yeah, it's just, yeah, exhausting. Because, like, people still look at him as a recruiting failure, despite leading the team to a national championship, helping them win second, and then first in the ACC in two difficult, difficult seasons. So I'm not here for that part of it.
Okay. So back to the statement, Kihei is the most successful guard that they've recruited since the Ty Kyle Dre class coming in, yes, right? As far as, by any metric. And number two is going to be Beekman, assuming he stays, right? Like, he's had sort of this first year, normal first year of a type of guy you want to come in and be the de facto heir apparent, you know, to the team. Like, he came, yeah, in, he had some great moments. He hit a bit of a freshman wall, sort of culminates in an amazing game winner that gives you hope.
Yeah.
Don't let him go anywhere, you know.
No, he's
whatever. And apparently, that, you know, I don't know, I don't have any inside info on this whatsoever, but there's enough message boards chatter saying there's smoke there a little bit that it's got me worried. Hopefully it's over nothing and we don't have to talk about it again.
Message board chatter.
Well, it's the same chatter that says the same thing about, you know, Jabri, and then he leaves.
Well, then they can easily say it about everyone. Like, it's
okay. I'm just saying, we're both hoping he doesn't leave.
No, I don't want him.
And if he does leave, then, you know, I don't know what we're gonna do. I have a whole team of completely new guys, I guess.
Yeah, that's,
anyway, those recruiting classes, that's a 4-year span where we're looking at this dearth of scoring options because it hasn't worked out in recruiting them. That's a big chunk of time. So how is the team going to fix that? Is where we, you know, get to our next point, is incoming transfers.
Why do we always talk? Here's the thing. I'm way more concerned about what the front court's going to look like.
I mean, we could be concerned about everything at this point. There's nobody. Well, yeah.
Look, I have no doubt that they're going to get some really great, like you said, the transfer market has actually worked, because people say, like, it never works for blah, blah. And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, are you forgetting who some of the transfers were? Because, like, Anthony Gill is obviously probably the best success story, maybe. Braxton
Keys out there, yeah,
wins the national championship. You know, like,
I mean, even Hauser, you know, it's only a year, yeah, but it's player of the year candidate.
Yeah. And I think they're going to find, that's the thing. Like, I don't have any doubt in my mind. They're going to find plenty of capable. And this season, again, I just want to reiterate for people, like, this season is extra weird. Like, most likely we won't see this type of movement in the transfer market again to this extreme. I don't think, if anything, it will, if they keep this, yeah, one time transfer with a no sit, because I thought originally that it was any time, like, for the future, open-ended future, you had a one time ability to transfer over your career and not have to sit. That might be where they get to, but this is just a one time this year if you transfer. So again, like, coming off of, like, you've seen Walker Kessler, I think UNC's had 3 or 4 guys go in there. You've seen Syracuse.
Florida's less, 5, yeah. I think 4 or 5, maybe it's 4, and then Mann turning pro.
Syracuse has had three or four guys. I mean, Syracuse right now has three returning players.
Duke had a couple, not the ones going pro, but
yeah, Jamin Brakefield left. And, yeah. And so this is not, and that's not to excuse, like, I am not in full panic mode, like, blah, blah, blah. Like, this is just what we also haven't fully, truly had, I don't think, since 2014, which we call the start of, like, the real Bennett era after getting his stuff in, is an actual down year. Because the years that we thought, like, maybe 2017, and then you talk again about injuries and whatever. But, like, even last year, like, that team down the stretch was really hitting its stride and finished second. Even this year, with all of the issues, like, the real tangible issues that they had, whether it's ball control or shooting or shot selection or what type of, what have you, finished first. And you can say whatever you want, like, the ACC was down, like, but they got it done with the pieces that they had. And so I don't think that Virginia fans really know what an actual down year is like. And yeah. And I'm just saying that to, like, warn people, I guess, like, having championship expectations is appropriate for Virginia basketball. Like, 100%. You should expect that most years, like, but if you think that they're going to make the Final Four every year, I think you're just a little, like, I mean, come on, like, it's not, that's hard to do, but you should expect that. Like, I just don't, what I'm saying is, like, I don't think that even if they struggle next year because of transfers and other things, that this is, like, the end of, like, Tony Bennett's success and the end of Virginia basketball being good and, like, all that stuff that I've seen over the past 24 hours, 48 hours with the transfer.
That would be a reach. Yeah.
Like, it just seems like they're going to, oh man, I want them to get the Georgetown kid so bad. Wahab. Like, cause that's what I want. Like, where are you going to find a ready big man? Like, I really like Caden Shedrick. I think that he's going to be a nice finesse guy, but they need, and oh my, I thought someone was trolling me in the comments after 5 years of defending Jack Salt, and someone jumps in the comments to be like, what this team needs is a big, like, a Jack Salt. And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, are you messing with me? Like, I spent 4 years saying that this guy doesn't suck, we need him on the team. Like, anyway, but they need a big guy that can body, like, a Keel or something like that. And
to pair
I don't
with Walker Kessler.
Dude, getting Walker Kessler would down. Be amazing.
That would be amazing. I mean, there are a bunch of good fits out there. The ECU wing is a good scorer. I don't really honestly feel like rattling off all
yeah,
the names
because
there's too many. And it's funny to follow the Twitter tracking of people UVA has reached out to allegedly, and it seems like all the appropriate ones, which is almost everyone, you know. So
yeah.
Because they have the scholarship and flexibility roster wise to bring in many people, so it'll be really how do you do that with immediate transfers who are probably transferring because of playing time or playing style, right? Like, you can't bring in five and be like, you're gonna be the guy. So maybe you spread it out. Maybe you get hopefully more first years to come in with Mr. Neely and
yeah, that would be. And the other part too is you these guys now all get an extra year of, so whatever it says that are in something you read. So, like, again, I'll go back to my guy Q Wahab from Georgetown. Like, he's a junior, but he'll still have 2 years of eligibility. So, like, play right away, have 2 years type thing. So just keep that in mind. Like, they could have an extra year of eligibility. I think Sam Hauser's great. And I think the timing for him, like, bless his heart, like, never got to play in front of a full crowd, like, all that stuff, like, sitting a year before everyone gets basically this free pass, like, and to play 1 year and, like, have to roll, like, the 1 year is tough. I think just having someone in for 1 year because of the way the defense is structured, and a lot will also depend
this
on.
This is all things I said when I said I didn't want to bring the Hauser brothers in because it was holding scholarships for not that much production, no matter how good they are.
No, I remember this conversation vividly.
Doing the podcast long enough.
I do remember. I was like, when it happened, I was like, oh man, Pierce is gonna have a field day with it. Like,
well, it was much better because it was only the one, so that's only one scholarship held up for a guy
well,
to sit
now
out
we
because
have plenty.
Because that team, you know, that coalesced around Momedy and Key and Kihei, you know, they needed a Hauser. They needed our Hauser.
Oh, so badly.
Can
you imagine
massive.
If
yeah,
can you
exactly.
imagine if that team had Sam?
Yeah.
Just so playing anyway, the three, like that would have been. Oh man.
I mean, this team, you're looking at a roster that has its veteran point guard who can't be the leading scorer, right?
No.
Hopefully, Beekman, or you know, fingers crossed, Beekman, who we know we're big fans of,
yes,
and hopefully is able to, you know, be a more you know, serious shooting threat. But obviously his strength is getting in the lane, and that's what we want, right? Like we want this attacking, aggressive guard play. And you've got Murphy, hopefully.
God,
we,
please.
You know, we haven't heard anything that's about the one. If he's going to go for it or not. He is really good.
Every time he posts something on Instagram, I like take a breath.
Shedrick is a big question mark, you know, at this point. We wanted to see what he was bringing this year, and it didn't work out for, you know, injuries. Some seemed sort of indescript. I don't know what was going on, but for whatever reason, it didn't work out. You know, Cafaro brings what Cafaro brings. I was a little shocked. Cafaro is a 4-star prospect, 4-star big guy. He's been in the system a long time.
I'm ready. I think it's happening. I think he's going to be our Jack. I think he's going to be the third-year jump.
He makes his free throws and he plays with aggression, God, like I keep saying over and over. So I like him, but you know,
I just need someone to do that thing where they just constantly throw things at you. Like while you're, cause like, I just want him to like grab like just a little bit more ball security.
My point is like, we can't go in saying like, oh, Cafaro and Shedrick, they're going to hold it down in the paint. Like we can't expect that. Maybe it works, but how, you know, so yeah, exactly like you said, we're worried about the front court as much as we're worried, if not more, about the back court, because all the bench left. So I got a couple more personnel questions. The most pressing one, I think, is sort of putting a wrap on Walden Tensei's time in Charlottesville. It obviously had his strong moments, some games where he would light it up. The game winner against Chapel Hill last year, obviously a big time moment. A few games this season where they really relied on his shooting spark, and that seemed to fade towards the end of the season, and particularly didn't get much of a run against Ohio.
No, and I think that's because Casey looked as comfortable and as good as he did, because Casey's a better defender. I think Tomas definitely got better at defense, like most players do, Virginia.
Yeah.
But it was one of those, it felt at times like they saw which one, tried to throw them both in, saw which one was feeling it more that day and rode that player. And I don't know. I like that kid, man.
Well,
like
Carolyn, we both like all the players. It's going to be, you know, it's a difference there I want to see him play 30 minutes a game because I think he's going to help us win a championship if he does so. We need those level guys. And could Tomas, I mean, it because we relied so heavily on him last year and often he produced, it was, I think, just sort of a numbers crunch, a rotation crunch, but it was too bad that we didn't get to see that type of level play from him this year for whatever the reasons. You know, some of that is Beekman, some of that is the minutes Kihei plays, is take many breaks, right? You know,
I think and that was part of the mass exodus after 2019, that they needed to find someone that could play immediately, that could fulfill like that three role with both Ty and Kyle, and all three of them, all three of them at different times, I think, could fulfill that three role. And so that's where, you know, I don't know that the plan was ever to play him as much this year with the players that they were going to end up having coming in. But so it's weird because, you know, that's how I always kind of thought about it. But there are, you know, folks that are like, where was Tomas? And, you know, that question's legitimate too. So it's just kind of, I don't know what I mean, the conversation or the stuff from Bennett makes it sound like all three seniors, Jay, Sam, and Tomas, were all leaving. We obviously haven't seen anything. And there's also the wrinkle of,
to assume.
There's also the wrinkle for him of, you know, where does he go? Because again, the pandemic has, you know, that's where, so there's rumors that Jose Alvarado is coming back to Georgia Tech, right?
Gotcha.
Part of this is around a lot of the players that could go make money somewhere playing overseas can't go right now because of everything going on in the travel restrictions.
Yeah.
So a lot of them, or some of them, people think might come back to college and use that extra year, because why not? Like, you just have another chance to get better and play, especially if NIL stuff passes, that's all been discussed. Then you could potentially also make a little bit of money your last year in school. Then
what a novel concept.
Right. And then go, you know, play for a team in Italy or something like that next year. So I don't know that that's necessarily applies to Tomas or anything, but it could be a reason where, I don't know, he might come. Might come back. We haven't heard from Jay yet. Jay.
Jay's like, I just live here now.
Yeah. He's just going to morph into an assistant coach. We're like, did he ever leave?
So they've got Tane Murray, who's, you know, highly touted international recruit. And then they've got the McCorkle and the Horkle on the bench this year. Yes. So both those guys apparently are capable shooters. So there you go. Maybe one of them slides in as an answer to the questions. I mean, again, it's like six different questions on the roster. So we're going to need a lot more answers from the transfer pool. And so are most other schools. So do not listen to this and think that the sky is falling on UVA. If it is a little, it is a little on everyone. So,
that's probably,
except Gonzaga. Seem to be in good shape.
If we are still sky is falling, or we're, you know, check back in like September.
Or Beekman leaves, in which case.
Oh God! And in which case, I'll just cry. I'm just coming back on
to talk for 45 minutes by myself about what's wrong with the fact that we don't have any basketball players left anymore.
Do you have any eligibility, Pierce?
Maybe he's no. I'm,
you know, how are your handles? Also, can you get to good. The rim?
No. I'm 1-for-1 on 3-point shots on the floor of the JPJ.
There we go.
You know,
see, that's
I took my shot and it went.
What is
one of the reporters who was sitting there said, it's just that easy. And I said, yep. And then that was it. All right.
What does Titus always say? If you're shooting 60%, you should be shooting 40% because you should be taking enough shots that you get back down.
Makes sense for sure. But I think like I was saying earlier, it's going to be interesting to see what type of players they bring in.
Yeah.
Because maybe they, I don't know, maybe they bring in more of that, like a ball handler, a 3-point shooter, and less of the, like, the entire offense revolves around you to handle and score.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the preference, but it seems to be like what has worked historically for Virginia. So I don't know. We'll wrap it up here. Thank you for listening to us lament and not know the answers to things because we don't know any of them yet. So hopefully you're turning in for inside info. But as you can hear,
Lax beat Notre
Dame.
That was good.
Hey, lacrosse won a game, and I feel like baseball's won a game at some point.
We'll try.
It's not a series.
We've heard you, folks. We're trying to. We'll get some.
Will keeps ducking us. To come on. He doesn't want to talk about the baseball team because he's too mad. The lacrosse. I mean, this is classic lacrosse. Is like they play the best teams over and over, and they're gonna win some of them and lose some others. And when do we play Duke?
Not for a couple weeks, at least. That, it's Richmond, then UNC, and then chalk up that loss to Duke.
There you go.
Yeah, April 15th after the UNC game.
So hopefully this is the end of the bad roster news for the Hoos. Hopefully, fingers crossed, knocked on wood.
There should be.
But the good news being that all that can really come now is good news. Or I guess a lack of good news would then inherently be bad news because it would mean they have no players.
That's the thing. Like, the leaving
that's
hurts.
That's worst case scenario.
The leaving hurts, but I could really use like a nice like incoming right now. Just to like make me feel. And granted, I know like players are probably like, oh, I'm going to feel it out and see who calls me, but I could really use like a nice like nab that ECU guard, like just one of those, you know, like maybe a little bit.
Well, we're out of like, okay, I'm expecting big things, guys, because they all left, so we need some guys to expect big things from. It really was those three. I mean, like, that's the
I expect
tragic
big things
comedy
from Reese,
of it.
But yeah, no, you're right. Yeah. Like,
Beekman slides right in. I mean, he
was
he
already
can be
playing.
The star of this team.
I get what you're saying though. Like Case, each one where it's like Casey felt so close to that breakthrough, and McCoy, I was like, he was like my guy to watch this season, right, where I was like, look, this guy like is gonna, you know, and he had those, everyone called it like qualities similar to Akil, to Isaiah Wilkins. And then obviously Jabri, like, you know, and it just didn't work out.
Blue chip recruit, right? So yeah. we hoped. So we'll hope for different
what we
people.
Get for hoping.
Right, exactly. So, but that news could break at any time. So stay tuned to streakingthelawn.com, and we'll be back once that news breaks to talk about our thoughts about that breaking news, hopefully. All right. Till then, for everyone with the blog, go Hoos.